Welcome to KDNK's Weekly Newsreel,
a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywax Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgebel. Open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywax.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host.
Let's start with a little good news. Paradise Bakery in Aspen will not be moving or closing down. The Aspen Daily News reports that the bakery will remain at its iconic corner spot. Italian retailer Loro Piana, the bakery's neighbor, called off plans to expand into the bakery's current space.
Garfield County has seen a recent increase in newly reported COVID-19 cases, reports the Post-Independent. Garfield County Public Health Director Yvonne Long told county commissioners since last week the county has seen 10 new onset cases. The State Department of Health and Environment said in the variance granted on May 23rd that if the county were to exceed 60 new cases in 2 weeks, the variance will automatically be rescinded.
Governor Jared Polis on Monday issued a new executive order extending the Safer at Home rules until July 1st. The Coloradan reports that the new order lifts some restrictions for people 65 and older and those with pre-existing conditions. They can now leave residences to recreate while maintaining social distancing and wearing masks. Some new policies for shops and restaurants in Carbondale take effect next week. As of Thursday, June 11th, Main Street between 3rd and 4th will become a one-way street with traffic heading east and will be closed entirely from 5 to 9 p.m. Friday and Saturday nights until further notice. Businesses along this section may expand up to 15 feet into the street. Merchants with private parking lots can expand within those lots with some restrictions. The town will provide barricades and access ramps at no charge while supplies last. Details are at the Town of Carbondale website.
Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said President Donald Trump's threat to deploy the military to cities is unconstitutional. Colorado Public Radio reports that Weiser said he'll challenge the move legally if the president carries through with it. The largest crowds and conflicts in the state are in Denver so far, where almost 300 people have been arrested or cited, mostly for curfew violations. Governor Jared Polis has called in the state's National Guard to help patrol downtown.
On Friday, May 22nd, Ashley Duquette, 32, died after jumping out the back door of an RV in which she was traveling east on I-70. The Garfield County coroner reports that the death occurred near mile marker 107 near Newcastle. Duquette's fiancé stated that she received a phone call, became visibly disturbed, and jumped from the vehicle. The death is being investigated as a suicide. Duquette was moving from California to Denver.
The artist Christo, known for massive public art projects, died Sunday at his home in New York. The Denver Post reports that he had given up on a controversial $15 million project called Over the River 2 years ago. The project would have covered 6 miles of Colorado's Arkansas River with a shimmering fabric. He is best known in the state for his orange valley curtain, draped across Rifle Gap in 1972. Christo was 84.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that over a 24-hour period, Friday, June 5th, the U.S. saw 20,555 new COVID-19 cases and 1,035 new deaths. The Pitkin County COVID-19 community report shows that as of Friday, Colorado's overall trend in new cases was increasing, with a total of 27,615 cases, 1,274 deaths just from COVID-19, and 255 new cases in 24 hours. The presence of COVID-19 is also increasing in Eagle County, with 603 cases, 8 deaths, and 4 new cases on June 5th. Garfield County is witnessing an overall decrease with 158 total cases, 2 deaths, and 1 new case on June 5th. Pitkin County is stable with 59 total cases, 2 deaths, and no new cases reported on Friday. Uproot Colorado, now in its fourth season, continues its statewide mission of reducing food waste and stocking local pantries with nutritious produce. Co-founder and co-director Kira Lowe describes how listeners can help by identifying local fruit trees.
We, over the past few years, have been developing a fruit tree registry, and we've had folks from Aspen to Parachute contact us to register their fruit trees, which basically means giving us information about what trees they have and allowing us to contact them when those trees become ready for harvest. And we then coordinate volunteer harvesting events or gleaning events. We harvest their trees. We will offer fruit tree owners a portion of the harvest, and all the volunteers that glean with us are encouraged and welcome to take food home with them. And then we distribute the rest to our local lift-up food pantries.
What about trees that are on town property? Do you glean those as well?
We certainly do. And our registry on our website has an option for people who know about public fruit trees to actually register these online, which is super helpful because we are a very small organization and we really rely on community members, not only for the harvesting, but to collect all of this information. So we really hope that community members, as well as signing up to volunteer, will help us kind of find where these fruit trees are so that we can really make sure we're accessing all the surplus food that is out there.
And how can people volunteer?
So on our website, uprootcolorado.org, folks can sign up to volunteer. And once they do that, we'll have them on our listserv, and then we will let people know as gleaning events come up. And these events are really for folks of all ages. We're in the process of drawing up guidelines to make sure that our volunteer events are safe, that we're following social distancing and other recommendations given the current reality.
Thanks, Kira.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Kira Lowe is the co-founder and co-director of Uproot Colorado. Restaurants in the state got the green light to reopen last week. KDNK's Kathleen Shannon spoke with Nikki Faust, general manager of Fat Thai in Carbondale, about the new indoor dining experience.
The only real difference for our diners is the government mandates that we have everyone wear a mask. So when you show up at the front door, you should have a mask on your face or some sort of face covering. You have to wear that until we seat you at your table. We realize that whoever you're coming in with is your COVID buddy, and you are allowed to be with them without a mask. And so once you sit at the table, you can take your mask off and place it wherever you feel it's safest. From then on, if you get up to use the restroom, you do need to wear a mask anytime you're loose in the restaurant, as it were. Then when you sit back down, you're welcome to take it off. You're eating, you're dining, there's drinks, there's food, there's love. That's just the same as it always was. When you leave, same thing, get up, put your mask on and leave. So honestly, as far as being a diner, it's not that much different.
There's also hand sanitizer available for guests at all tables, which are spaced 6 feet apart. The government requires that spacing and also requires that all guests waiting to be seated do so outside the restaurant. Fat Thai staff is also adhering to some new protocols.
You'll see us doing some things differently. Your server will be wearing a mask the entire time. We are wearing gloves when we're picking up dishes. So I would ask a little bit of leeway with some folks. A lot of folks are used to us coming and dropping and picking and doing all the things at the same time. So if we leave your dirty dish, it's because we have to go glove up first.
The staff has also stopped reusing menus. Instead, they print new ones and recycle used ones daily. This practice also gives them flexibility with the menu's content, as certain foods have become less available since the onset of the pandemic.
The green papaya that we get, one of our food purveyors basically said, we're not doing any special orders for anything. So if they had it in stock, it was fine. If they didn't have it, which green papaya was one they did not, we couldn't get it. Some of our prices are going up a little bit in terms of like beef, as I'm sure you can imagine. So we're trying to mitigate slash decide what's worth it and what's not.
Faust says most of the guidance Fat Thai used to model its new dining practices came locally from Garfield County.
It was a little quick for us. Like, we knew on Memorial Day that we could be open that day, which was a little bit unreasonable. But it was okay. We opened Tuesday. You know, we were prepared enough to know this could happen at any point in time. So we were prepared enough to just go ahead and open and do our thing. And the guidance has been as good as it's going to get, because I understand that they also don't know exactly what they're dealing with. So we're just doing our best to say, okay, here's the guidelines, follow these to a T, this is what it is, until it's something different.
The staff has another new role, and that is to make things feel as normal as possible for their guests.
I personally, and I think most of our staff here, is not especially fearful. We are concerned to do the best we can to keep everyone safe. We all realize that we are a hub of activity, which also means germs. We're doing our best to not be any kind of a hotspot, but we're excited to be reopened for sure.
Faust thanks the community for their support while the dining room is closed, and also encourages anyone with questions about its reopening to give Fat Thai a call.
The Garfield County Fair will be considerably smaller this summer. The Friday night concert, PRCA Pro Rodeo and Extreme Bulls, Demolition Derby, Monster Trucks, and the Carnival have all been canceled.
Aww.
But the good news is, some of the more traditional events have not. Carla Farrand of the county's CSU Extension Program told KDNK that most of the 4-H projects and competitions are still on, including the county shoot from July 10th through 12th.
Our youth in our shooting sports discipline will go through a timed event to put their marksmanship on paper. And it's from disciplines such as archery, shotgun, air rifle, pistol, to Western Heritage, which also includes an interview, a test, actually period correct costume.
Most of those events will take place at the Rifle Sportsman's Club. The fashion review and cake decorating contest take place on July 16th. The dog show is on July 22nd. Farron said contestants for shooting events and the dog show will practice in smaller groups this month so they can be ready for a socially distanced competition in July.
If the dogs do not practice together, they don't know each other, especially with a young person working with these brand new dogs or dogs they've had for a couple years and may not be accustomed to other dogs, and we don't want an aggressive situation.
The horse show on July 18th and 19th has turned into an educational event. The animal husbandry competitions and livestock auction will be online, but open class exhibits featuring arts and crafts, photography, gardening skills, and more will be live.
Our goal is to go ahead with open class. We're going to separate it instead of just in one hall, we're going to put it in two halls so that we can maintain the 6 foot of social distancing space with all of our volunteers and when it comes time for judging.
The Garfield County Fair is from July 27th to August 2nd. More information about this year's changes is at garfieldcountyfair.com.
You're listening to the Weekly News Reel, featuring top stories aired between Monday and Friday. In-kind support comes from Grassroots Community Network, promoting civic participation through civil discourse, creative endeavors, and cultural interaction. Grassroots TV also partners with KDNK to air live Pitkin County public health and community meetings. More info at grassrootstv.org.
So, is the 49th annual Carbondale Mountain Fair on or off?
It will be a fair like no other fair they've attended. We're looking at smaller bursts of joy spread out throughout town rather than one central location. So you will not come to Soper's Park to experience the Mountain Fair this year. but the Mountain Fair may come to you. We're going to get a flatbed truck. We're going to have artists decorate it. We're going to create a stage on the back of the truck. And on Saturday and Sunday, we will be bringing music, different musicians, to neighborhoods around Carbondale, bringing the music to the people.
Talk about the musicians and how that will work. I mean, usually people go down to the main stage and they listen to music every couple of hours. There's a turnover in acts. What will this look like on the truck?
Well, in my head, as I imagine it, and believe me, in all these areas, it's just unfolding, so we don't have specific details. But imagine this. There's an incredible mariachi band out of Glenwood Springs. But let's say I can get the mariachi band, and we can travel to different neighborhoods and even be in places where we might not have captured again. You know, we can go to the trailer park behind Garcia's or over here, you know, near Snowmass Drive, plus a lot of other neighborhoods. But, you know, we can reach people we might not normally always reach. Maybe we could have a Sunday morning classical, and we can go to Heritage.
Do you think you'll have wood splitting and limbo? And
I don't think we'll have wood splitting and limbo.
Oh,
actually,
no.
I know. I just, they're a little tougher to pull off. Somebody might come with a great idea, and we're not ruling them out. What I will say is we are looking at some kind of bike experience, and we are looking into the possibility of doing the longer running race with Independence Run and Hike. You know, fly casting seems like that could be a good social distancing competition. Pie and cake, we are still looking into how we might have those competitions.
So definitely pie and cake is still on the table, no pun intended.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We will do a virtual live concert from Steve's Guitars on Saturday night, and that will be a mix of storytelling, music, laughter, spoken word, all the things that you would normally find at the fair. And we're encouraging people to get together their own private posse of people they feel comfortable with in their yards or homes and have a viewing party. And that way we can all be connected. That will also raise money so that we can have the best 50th Carbondale Mountain Fair next year in 2021. And we will have, of course, a huge drumming experience on Friday at 4 to kick the fair off. We are asking everyone to go in front of their places they live or their yards. And we're just going to see if we can raise the roof off the sky for 20 minutes during the opening of the 49th Carbondale Mountain Fair.
Why not just cancel the fair this year instead of going through all of these gyrations to keep it going?
Well, you know, the Carbondale Mountain Fair is really about connecting community, coming together in some kind of way. And while our world is different right now, we still need to find connection. It's extremely important, and that's, I think, one of the most important jobs of the Mountain Fair, and that is the spirit that, you know, you see throughout Carbondale all year long and makes our place unique. We've had this fair for 49 years, and the process of coming together has really helped us be able to take that spirit and live it throughout the year, whether we agree or disagree on things. We think that's important more now than ever.
What about the vendors?
We are hoping to have a smaller, local, regional vendor area. You know, it'll be safe to go and we can keep people spread out. We will not have food vendors. In fact, we're hopeful that people will just support our local restaurants. They're going to be taking a huge hit that weekend.
Speaking of taking a huge hit, talk about how this will impact Carbondale Arts and what Carbondale Arts is doing to maybe offset that impact.
Well, it's a huge impact to us. We net anywhere between $60,000 to $100,000 between the Mountain Fair and the fashion show. That's about a third
of our budget, a little over a third, actually. There was a part of us that just wanted to run away and say, let's not put any more energy towards this. We're not going to make any money doing it this way. But then, you know, we really remembered what the importance of the fair is. We know that it's probably going to cost us more money to put this on that we won't necessarily get back. But we have found in this community that you pay it forward and people get back to you. So we are looking at several ways to hopefully create some income. One will be the big fundraiser, Saturday Night Live from Steve's. We are creating the Carbondale Comeback Passport. It's a book that will have coupons, discounts to different businesses throughout the valley, and people will buy it and go into a business, get a discount. They'll put a stamp on it. We also are going to have the 49th annual Mountain Fair t-shirt designed by Jade Meyer. We will be selling it online through our website, carbondalearts.com. But also we will be at the farmer's market every Wednesday afternoon selling t-shirts and passports and local artisan goods throughout the summer.
More information about the 49th annual Carbondale Mountain Fair is at carbondalearts.com. For more than 25 years, wolf proponents have worked toward returning the predator to Colorado. A new survey shows most residents support the idea, even as media coverage of wolves tends toward the negative. KVNF's Jody Peterson reports.
This fall, Colorado voters will decide whether gray wolves should be returned to the state. The last gray wolf, native to Colorado, was killed in 1945, but occasional wanderers have been spotted in recent years, including a pack of six in northwestern Colorado this past winter. Ballot Initiative 107, if approved by voters in November, would tell Colorado Parks and Wildlife to create a plan to introduce about 10 gray wolves a year to the state, starting in 2023. Controversy over the measure has been intense, and feelings run strong on both sides of the issue. Colorado State University recently funded a study about attitudes towards wolf reintroduction and whether media coverage accurately reflected those attitudes. The study asked 734 state residents about whether they would support wolf reintroduction and how they thought wolves might impact their lives. The study also looked at the top 10 Colorado daily newspapers to see what positive or negative effects of wolf reintroduction they reported. Rebecca Nemec, one of the lead authors of the CSU study, lists some of the impacts, both good and bad, cited by the survey takers.
Positive reasons included things like restoring balance to ecosystems, improving the natural environment, the opportunity to view wolves in the wild, or emotional and cultural connection to wolves. Whereas negative, people mentioned the concerns about threats to their safety, to the safety of their pets, loss of hunting opportunities, and potential wolf attacks on livestock.
Overall, Nemec says, the survey showed that 84% of Coloradans across the state support wolf reintroduction. On the western slope, nearly 80% of respondents indicated they would vote for the ballot measure to reintroduce wolves. The survey results are consistent with several other surveys that have been done since 1994.
We did find a higher level of support for wolf reintroduction than past surveys of public opinion in Colorado, but these past surveys also found essentially that the majority of Coloradans do support wolf reintroduction.
Media coverage, however, doesn't tend to reflect that widespread support, says Nemec.
What we found is that the media articles really focused more on negative impact themes than those positive impact themes. The finding is consistent with some other social science studies of media coverage of conservation issues and carnivore conservation, and local media sources tend to focus more on kind of the negative impacts of carnivores on livelihoods and on local communities, whereas national coverage tends to focus on kind of these broader positive concepts like biodiversity conservation.
The November vote will show if most Coloradans do indeed support wolf reintroduction. In the meantime, 29 counties across the state have passed resolutions opposing it, including Delta, Mesa, Montrose, and Hinsdale counties. For KVNF, this is Jody Peterson.
And finally, word of mouth sparked a silent vigil in Carbondale last week that drew an unexpectedly large crowd.
Thank you.
Around 6 p.m. Saturday, close to 200 people made their way into the park at Carbondale's 4th Street Plaza and took the knee. It was a silent vigil of solidarity with nationwide protests against police violence. Taking the knee may not have started with NFL star Colin Kaepernick in the summer of 2016 when he knelt during the national anthem at a preseason game instead of standing with his hand over his heart. But he made it a symbol of protest against racism and police violence. Over the weekend, people gathered across the country to protest the death of Minneapolis resident George Floyd after police officer Derek Chauvin held Floyd down on the side of a Minneapolis street with his knee to Floyd's neck. In a video that's gone viral since the incident on May 25th, Floyd can be heard begging for his mother and pleading for Chauvin to release him because he can't breathe. Chauvin has since been fired from the Minneapolis Police Department and charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter.
We need to change the narrative. People aren't killed because they're black or they're brown. They're killed because of racism.
Carbondale resident April Crow Spaulding was the only speaker at the vigil. She says the event was her idea. She had been camping out for a few days and didn't see the protests about the death of George Floyd until she came home.
I came home and I just felt I needed to do something. My original idea, honestly, was just to come down by myself and kneel on the corner. Then I let a couple friends know, and they let a few friends know. And the next thing you know, we have almost 200 people on the corner here in Carbondale.
The privilege of living in an environment that is relatively free of extreme police violence was not lost on some of those who vigiled.
I'm Johanna, and I live in Aspen. I don't know, I wanted to come because when I saw the video of George Floyd, it really saddened me, and if we just see in the news all the time that police are very aggressive with people of color, and I disagree with it. And yeah, I want to make some sort of difference. I want to do something, so I came here.
Megan, I live in Carbondale. I'm here for the people that can't be here, and because I have the privilege to be here, and I feel like it's my privilege to be able to stand up for what I think is right.
Privilege. Tell me more.
Being a white person, being in a town like this where we don't see a lot of the same police brutality that's going on in a lot of the other places, I think that it's really important for us to still recognize these issues, even though we have the privilege of not experiencing them ourselves.
I'm Maeve. I'm Megan's sister. I go to school in Los Angeles, and I was aware of racism before leaving this valley, but being in a city so big, I started to see it more. I had a friend from Pakistan who was walking down the street, and police would stop and ask for his papers when we were just, like, going to get coffee. And I think seeing that and it becoming personalized for me made me realize that what Megan said, I have the privilege to use my voice, I have the privilege to have a platform that people listen to, and I think it's important to use that.
Mark, Glenwood Springs. I'm angry.
Tell me more.
I'm angry about being born in a police state. I was born in 1987, and there was anger then, and ever since I existed, there's been anger about how the police treat our citizens, and I'm angry. I'm angry.
My name is Erin Galbraith. I live here in Carbondale. When I heard about the event, I thought it was important to show up in solidarity and show my support. Being a person of Caucasian race, I recognize my privilege on a daily basis, and it doesn't go unnoticed, and I want to stand up for those who don't have that privilege and want to create the equality that needs to be there.
April Crow Spaulding said she's glad the gathering was peaceful.
Never wanted it to be a protest or any kind of anger. I just wanted people to know that other people care also.
That does it for this week's newsreel on KDNK. All of our stories and more are at kdnk.org. The Weekly Newsreel is a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening and have a great week.